Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we will be speaking with guest expert, eggnog and drink historian, Clint Lindier. Clint is the co-author of Drunken History, a historical deep dive on booze and drinking culture. And you can follow him on Twitter, at Drunken History. Let's hear what he has to say about eggnog and the eggnog riots. Hi, Clint. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your specialty in the world of alcohol and academia?
Well, I'm kind of a travel and spirits historian and enthusiast, hobbyist, maybe. I'm an English professor by day, but I've written pretty extensively for the Huffington Post and Eater and Footers and a lot of different magazines on spirits and travel. Spirits meaning the kind you imbibe. And I've co-authored a few books, Drunken History, which is kind of a deep dive into history and man's relationship, well, society's relationship with booze, which came out before the TV show, I might say, so we didn't rip them off. I've also co-authored Bucket List Bars, Historic Saloons, Pubs, and Dives of America, which is kind of a look at the historic bars around, or I guess a guidebook to the historic bars around the nation. And then my latest book, which came out, I think it was this year, it's my anti-cocktail craft cocktail book called Cracktails, the world's weirdest, worst, and most disturbing drink. So that's sort of where I fall into this weird place between booze and society and stuff.
I'm sure people ask you this all the time, but how drunk are you right now?
Well, it's only 9:30 in the morning here, so I would say on a scale of 1 to 10, probably about a 7. You know, it's a light day. No, I'm being facetious.
You're drunk on life right now.
That's exactly right. I'm drunk on life. Yeah. Thank you for that, but bailing me out.
So where? Let's talk about eggnog. Where and when was eggnog invented?
Well, we don't have any exact reference. It's going to come from England, probably. Definitely Europe, but more than likely England. For about 1,000 years, they've been mixing eggs and alcohol of some kind. Booze, you know, spirits, really only came about in the last probably 1,000 years or so. I mean, we know that booze wasn't readily available until probably about 1200 or thereabouts. So when we're mixing spirits with eggs or milk or anything like that, it had to have been probably within the last 800 years. Okay. So there was a drink that had strong ale in it and eggs from about 1200. And then about 1400, we get them mixing eggs and spirits, which would make sense because that's when spirits kind of became readily available, especially to the upper classes. So we're about 15th century now, and that's about when it started, but it was really only available to the very, very, you know, wealthy. Because you had spirits, you had sugar. Those are two things that were really expensive in Europe at that time, or in England at that time, as well as eggs and dairy. But then we brought it to the colonies and around, you know, in the 1700s, and it became pretty, you know, pretty ubiquitous because sugar was cheap, booze was cheap here. Eggs and dairy were readily available everywhere. So that's sort of the brief history.
So eggnog is now booming in the colonies, is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. We know, I mean, they drank it. Well, there's two thoughts. There's one that it was simply a beverage, a recreational beverage, because it's good, right? It's tasty, and people like tasty stuff. But the other thought is that it was used as more of a way to preserve eggs and dairy kind of at the end of their shelf life, right? Because we don't have refrigerators. We don't have anything like that. Eggs can keep for a long time outside of refrigerators. Obviously, dairy can't, right? So we've got to, when it's at the end of their kind of useful life, their shelf life, and they're getting towards, you know, where we don't really want to drink them anymore, we don't want to waste them either. So if we mix it with sugar and booze, whiskey really, which is just dirt cheap. Whiskey and rum were just, rum especially, was dirt cheap in the colonies because we made so much of it. And if we could just, we could mix our eggs and our dairy with that, and it would keep it preserved, for months. The alcohol would cure it, and then we could use it later.
Now, why is rum and whiskey so cheap?
Sadly, there's the slave trade, you know, the triangle trade that we brought slaves up here, and we exchanged it for exports and so on and so forth. And part of that was molasses. And actually, the center for rum production was New England during the colonies. A lot of the, Paul Revere and a lot of those guys were friends with rum distillers and so forth. So rum was really cheap. Domestic rum was really cheap, I should say. Caribbean, whatever. Jamaican rum was still pretty expensive. But domestic-made rum was cheap. And then corn alcohol and rye were extremely inexpensive too, because corn was easy to grow here in the colonies, and a lot of people grew it. And when they couldn't either sell all the corn or eat all their corn, they would just turn it into alcohol and sell it as whiskey or something. So George Washington, for example, is one of the biggest whiskey distillers in the nation, which is always fun. But yeah, so those two things, sugar was cheap to get, again, because we're so close to the Caribbean where the sugar cane was grown, and as was booze. So you had all the ingredients here. They're really close by. They're really inexpensive. So it became much more recreational. Eggnog did. Became much more recreational in the colonies in the 18th century.
So what was drinking like in the early 1800s? Could these cadets really hold their liquor?
Oh, man. Drinking was everywhere. It's been argued that the average person in America above the age of 14 drank about 6 pure gallons of alcohol every year. Like, that's the amount they consume. Now today it's about 2 or 3 gallons. And when I say pure, I mean 100% alcohol. And when you consider that, like, a shot of, you know, Jack Daniels or something is only 80 proof, so it's only 40% alcohol. We're talking Everclear. So like 6 gallons of Everclear every year is what every man, woman, and child above the age of 14 drank. So booze was ubiquitous. It was everywhere. It was, some would say, pernicious. We drank everything. We drank rum. We drank corn whiskey. We drank, you know, wine. We drank everything we could get our hands on. Kids drank it. Beer was a table beverage for children. Hard cider was a table beverage for children. We drank a lot. I'm not gonna let my kids drink until they're at least 15. So, you know, it's, things are a lot different now. But
I see you upped the age from 14 to 15.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have to be responsible. I mean, we are, you know, in today's society, come on, we're modern progressive thinkers. So by 1826, those cadets, you know, 19 to 20 years old, they've been drinking for all their life. They've been drinking, you know, and whiskey, as I said, whiskey was two things that we don't, that are a lot different. So whiskey was dirt cheap. Corn whiskey especially was dirt cheap. It was really strong. It was much stronger than we have today. I mean, today, if you buy a bottle of bourbon, for example, which is the typical corn whiskey, if you buy a bottle of bourbon, it's as I said, it's going to be about 80 proof. That's about where the U.S. market is. So that's only 40% alcohol. They were probably doing barrel proof. They probably didn't cut it at all. So we're looking at 120, 130 proof. So 60 to maybe even 70% alcohol was in that whiskey. It might not have been aged. That's another thing to consider. So you look at a bottle of, you know, Jack Daniels or Jim Beam or something like that. It's that pretty brown color because they've aged it in oak barrels for like 5 years. Well, this is like moonshine, right? So it's really harsh. It's really strong and it's really cheap, you know? So, and they would have been used to it, unlike us who have a more refined modern palate.
I'm fascinated by the fact that these cadets, I mean, I understand that it's Christmas and their choice of eggnog. You know, perhaps we can talk about why eggnog is associated with Christmas. But I'd also want to talk about, like, why they chose eggnog for their, like, massive kegger.
That's a great question. Well, I think one answer might be because, again, the whiskey was so harsh. It's not what we think about as whiskey today. I mean, we can take any bottle of whiskey off the shelf, pour it straight, and sip it neat, and we won't be falling over, within 5 minutes. But this stuff was straight, you know, pure alcohol, really harsh because it wasn't aged, and you know the mash bills. It wasn't made for a more sophisticated palate like we have today. It was made to, you know, to get you drunk probably. So think of all the cheap stuff you had in college. And up the terrible factor by 10. So, you know, they wanted to water it down. They wanted to make it more palatable. So that's probably one reason, especially when they had, I mean, they say 3 to 4 gallons, but most of what I read is about 4 gallons of this stuff. So they had 4 gallons of booze, of whiskey, probably corn whiskey. And, they have a lot of cadets. I think ultimately 90 were singled out. So say 90 cadets, 4 gallons of booze. So they need to stretch it. They need to make it taste better. That's probably what they did. And so the question of why eggnog, eggnog was tradition. So it was by this time, 1826, you know, early 19th century, late 18th century, eggnog had become a traditional kind of Christmas beverage because again, it started out. And this is where the people that say, well, it's to preserve food. That's why it became popular. This is where they have a really good point. Eggs, milk, and so forth, by the end of spring or by the end of summer, rather, beginning of fall, they might start going bad. So you want to preserve it, right? So you're going to preserve it through the winter months, right? And so Christmas is a celebratory time. It gives you the opportunity to crack open one of these bottles and drink it. So eggnog probably became very just, you know, part of the celebration or tradition of Christmas even back then. So the cadets were used to it. They're used to it at home. You know, a lot of these cadets were middle upper class family from middle or upper class families. So they're used to these kind of traditions anyway. So to them, it would have been, just part of the celebration of Christmas.
So I'm fascinated. You're saying that eggnog became traditional Christmas drink because it was just timing. It's like that's around when the eggs and the cream were going to go bad. So
I think timing and it was yummy, right? And so this is something to celebrate. They didn't have, you know, we have 10 federal holidays. I think they had none back then. So they had just the very church-based holidays, you know, Christmas and Easter and so forth. But this was a big one, you know. Christmas was a big holiday when people got the day off and so forth. You know, they're working the work week back then was 6 to 7 days, right? So they actually got a day off during the week. It was kind of a big deal. They wanted to celebrate. So,
right. So what can you tell us about George Washington's connection to eggnog and I guess alcohol in general? You were saying he was a whiskey distiller. And have you ever tried his eggnog recipe?
Okay. A lot of stuff. So George Washington was, he could hold his liquor. That's what we know. George Washington was 6'5" and 250 pounds. He was a big guy, especially at that time. I'm tall for that time and I'm a short person. So, he was really tall for that time. we know that he enjoyed imbibing. We have lots of records of him at various kind of either state events or some type of official events, whether it be Masonic lodges or something, where he was responsible for making all these toasts. And back then when you made a toast, you finished your glass. So you didn't say toast, take a sip and toast. You toasted somebody and then drained your glass. And so we have all these records of him doing that. So we know that he liked booze. And so that's one thing that we just kind of have this historic, maybe just because of him, because he was so prominent, they wrote down everything that he did. And we know that he drank a lot because of that. But again, everybody drank a lot. And then in 1788, he started distilling his own rye whiskey because he grew rye at Mount Vernon. So he grew the grain at Mount Vernon. And this is sort of like what happened to all the farmers at the time is, well, we have this extra grain. We have this extra corn. What should we do with it? You know, it's hard to transport because you need a wagon or whatever. It's easier just to make it into whiskey, and then we can sell it as whiskey instead. So he started doing that, and he became the biggest whiskey distiller. I mean, he hired a Scottish foreman, I can't remember his name right now, who built him a mill and said, you know, I know about whiskey because, of course, he's Scottish. No offense to Scottish people, but they like whiskey. And in any case, but he was a foreman. He built this mill, and he said, you know what, General Washington, you could make a lot of money if we take this grain and turn it into whiskey and sell it. And Washington's like, let's do it. And so by his death, he was the biggest distiller in America. As far as his connection with eggnog, lots of stuff. I'm sorry, I'm all over the place.
No.
As far as his connection with eggnog, we do have his recipe, but we also have his recipe for beer. I mean, again, these were common household beverages that everybody had. I think everybody probably had their own. We know Thomas Jefferson had a recipe for beer, for example. So they all probably had their own recipes. We have a recipe for rum punch from Washington. So eggnog was just one of those things that they had. This was his recipe. So he liked to use. There's some funny parts about that recipe. He didn't use brandy. He used sherry, which is more expensive. And if you notice, it says Barbados rum. Or Jamaican rum, one of the two, but it's not just rum. It's Caribbean rum or Caribbean rum, whatever, which is more expensive. So he's using really expensive ingredients in his eggnog. I don't know if you could tell the difference between, you know, good rum and terrible rum when you mix it with eggs and sugar, but he was using good stuff. So have I ever had his recipe? I don't know if I have. The last recipe, the one that I have in my fridge right now has brandy, rum, and whiskey in it. So it's pretty close to his, but it's not sherry and it's not, you know, a particular kind of rum because it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like taking really expensive bourbon and making an old fashioned or out of it, you know,
yeah.
why hide the taste of really good booze with eggs and sugar and milk? So, but it's good. I mean, the recipe that I use, it has brandy, rum, and whiskey, which is what he used. Although he used rye whiskey, I use bourbon. But yeah, it's good. It works really well. It's a delicious stuff. You know, delicious eggnog.
Stamp of approval. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
George Washington's recipe.
Yeah.
Now,
definitely.
The cadets at West Point often frequented a local tavern called Benny Haven. I'm mm-hmm. not sure if you're familiar with this historic mm-hmm. bar, but if so, can you tell us about it?
You know, I've never been there personally, but I've been to a bar. There's a bar called the Old 76 House, which is in Tappan, New York, which is south of West Point. And it's kind of representative of what they would have looked like at the day. It's just a single room. with, you know, just a bar on it. And it was a very kind of roughshod type of place by then. But taverns were where everyone hung out. It was the Starbucks kind of its time. And you'd go there to post, you know, notices for public notices for all kinds of stuff. So stuff was going on at the taverns. There was really only two public places in every town, and that was a church and a tavern. So the cadets would go to the tavern and would barter for drinks. So they would trade stuff that was sent to them from home. So they'd trade everything from socks to blankets to shoes to whatever they had for booze. They didn't have any money because they weren't allowed jobs. They weren't allowed currency. And they weren't allowed to barter anything from West Point, from the military. So they could only barter personal possessions. So you can imagine them writing home and saying, "Hey, Mom, you know, I need some more socks," or something like that, and getting them and then running over to the tavern and saying, "Hey, can I get a bucket of booze?" type of thing. You know?
So, booze sort of for socks.
Thing. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense to me. I'd trade my socks for booze. Like, you
know. That's an easy call. So, right. How has the trajectory of eggnog really evolved to what it is now?
Commercially available, kind of popular culture eggnog. We've taken the booze out, first of all. So we've made it family friendly. I don't know when that happened, but I suspect it was probably after Prohibition. There weren't really problems with still up until, you know, 1918, 1919, there weren't problems with giving children, you know, beer or anything like that. I mean, a lot of families had like their household beer and children would partake. So it was after Prohibition that we got all these federal laws that had to do with alcohol. So that's probably when booze was removed. And it's really been watered down, pardon the pun. I think now the law says that to call it eggnog, you have to have at least 1% egg in the entire batch, right? So in a gallon of eggnog, only 1% of it is actually egg. The rest is just, you know, sugar and flavorings and stuff like that.
So yeah.
It's become terrible, frankly. once you try the real stuff, you can appreciate what they had. It's really good.
If you compare it to George Washington, I believe his recipe calls for 12 eggs. Mm-hmm. I think today's eggnog is
1%, right? Yeah, but see, the thing is, once you know, you have to age it. That's one of the secrets too, and that's something I've always wondered about this. You know, the eggnog riot is there's no aging. They just poured the booze in, mixed it all up, and you know, away you go. But if you ever read his recipe, you know, he talks about you have to beat the yolks and the whites separately. And then you fold one into the other, and then you beat the cream until it essentially turns into whipped cream, and you fold that in. So it's a very delicate type of process, right? And then you mix the liquid with all of that stuff together, and then you just let it sit. You literally, for me, I put it in the fridge for about a month, and it looks kind of funky. But what happens is that booze just breaks down all of that protein and the eggs and everything else, and it ends up making this really velvety smooth, delicious kind of drink. So the cadets, I mean, they were like, you know, Rocky with eating raw eggs. It's like, I can't imagine how terrible it must have been, but right now it's like, quick batch eggnog is not something I would ever want to try.
Wow. We made so much fun of George Washington for, you know, waiting out the egg process, but I guess he knew what he was talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you have to. You really do. You let that booze just get in there and cure it and break it all down, and then it's delicious. It's worth the time that it takes, which is why, like I said, they must have been so desperate for something. They wanted a party.
Tonight, you know, is just, the night.
But, you know, I guess I always think back to like my sophomore year in college, you know, when I was drinking the stuff that I would drink back then, right? The Boons and the Mad Dog and all the other rot gut that you drink. That has not changed, you know, in 200 years, that has not changed at all. Here are a bunch of college students and they'll just drink whatever they can get, you know?
So we are in the blame business. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask you, at the end of the day, who or what do you think would have been responsible or to blame for the eggnog riots? If you had to pick one thing, what, who or what would that be?
God, there's so many different factors to look at. An obvious one is Thayer, the commandant, who outlawed booze. And this was a tradition that they've had forever, but he outlawed it that year. That's certainly one that, you know, is fairly obvious. You could also, I mean, you could blame some of the older cadets, like Jefferson Davis was there. He was, I think he was, again, pardon the pun, egging them on. And I know that was terrible. I'm sorry. That's why I'm not the professional comedian. But he was getting them into trouble, and he was an older cadet, and there were other older cadets that were kind of doing the same thing. There's the tavern keepers who, you know, there's that guard who turned his back and let him walk through with all
35
the
cents,
35 cents, you know, which is, so let's see, if you think that in today's dollars, 10 cents is probably about what, like $2 or $3, I think.
Oh yeah. We did the math. It comes up to $8.20 yeah. something cents.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Not very much money. So I don't know. I would also look at the culture. I think that would be a big one. Drinking culture, it really did change towards the end of the 19th century. Beginning of the 19th century, though, coming out of the 18th century, we were just saturated with booze. I mean, we really were. Drinking houses back then, like Whiskey Row, you hear these terms like Whiskey Row and Skid Row and stuff like that. They were. It was amazing how terrible they were. I mean, you'd go into a bar in some places and they would literally have a pipe, or not a pipe, but like a hose attached to a barrel of booze. And you could just, for like 25 cents, you could just put your mouth on the hose and just drink and drink and drink and drink and drink until you pass out. So I think the culture might really be something to look at. So that's kind of before they get there, right? This is what caused them to kind of have that entitled attitude, right? The attitude of, you know, this is what we always do. How can you take this away? I mean, this is what we're used to. This is kind of the culture of the time. So I think that might have a lot to do with it as well.
Interesting. We might have to revisit this back when we discussed based on your comments.
Well, I'm sorry to throw a wrench in it.
No, it's great. Thank you so much, Clint, for joining us today and helping us understand eggnog and, you know, alcohol in general a little bit.
Of course. Absolutely. It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Hello, Rebecca. Hello, Alarmy.
And fact checker Chris Smith.
I'm here. I'm drunk.
That's I wish, right? Listening to that made me really want a creamy drink.
It also made me feel like, you know, I don't drink that much. If you compare yourself to an 18, you know, person in the 1800s, yeah. I'm doing great.
I definitely don't have a drinking problem. I mean, look at those people. They have a drinking problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'm well within my 2 to 3 gallons a year.
I can even hit that. I am thriving.
I mean, if you include the wine, I'm hitting the gallon mark.
Oh yeah. Oh, easy. The pure, but when he said that it was like 6 gallons of pure alcohol.
Yeah, I mean, that's a crazy stat. How you kind of can think how you. That sort of broke my brain a little bit. I couldn't really figure that one out. But all I know is that if there's a lot of weddings I have to go to, my gallon intake is going to increase quite a bit.
That's right. But with quarantine, there have been no weddings, except at home drinking has increased.
There's nothing to wake up for in the morning.
We've had a little wedding every night of quarantine. Just a small one.
A small wedding. You learn some. We keep learning because I just said we keep learning. What a nerd. but we do. We keep learning because we talked about the 6 gallon thing, you know, in the Prohibition episode. But I never realized it was pure alcohol.
Right.
Yes, that is insane. And I also just want to mention something that he said that really startled me, which was that you could go to a tavern, pay 25 cents to put your mouth on a hose that was tapped straight into like a huge liquor barrel.
Yeah, I mean, I love talking to Clint. He really was insightful.
Just a quick fill up. Get me going.
Like a car.
That is insane. Just a hose. I mean, I guess it's like the, what are those things that frat guys do where you have the hose
like
from the beer
stand.
Kegger.
But he mentioned Whiskey Row, which I had heard of, but he also mentioned Skid Row. And I wonder if that's where the term comes from. I mean, now when you think of Skid Row, you think of, sadly, like, you know, downtown homeless, you know, encampments, but perhaps it comes from alcohol. Perhaps it was like where the bars were.
I think I've looked this up actually as the fact checker. Skid on the skids was a term they used for things are not looking good for me. I'm on my way down. So I think that's where Skid Row comes from. So skids, I believe, are what they put logs on.
Oh, here it is, yeah. The term Skid Row originally referred to the path along which timber workers skidded logs.
Which means it goes downhill.
Oh, Skid Row.
You're on the
skids. Interesting.
So, I mean, he said so many things that I wanted to discuss. First of all, he said that George Washington, of course, was 6'5" and tall for his for the time. He also said he was short and that he would have been tall for the time. I'm 5 feet. I'm wondering if I would have been tall for the time.
Oh, Rebecca.
Warm up that time machine because you would have probably fit right in.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think you would have been maybe average.
And that's the nicest thing anyone said to me ever.
Merry Christmas.
Amanda, you would have been a tall, like I guess supermodel.
I would have been a supermodel in the 1800s. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
And Chris, I mean, you could have been a supermodel too.
I don't think that modeling was as useful back then. I think we probably would have worked in a store with high shelves. Maybe Amanda and I, like Amanda work at like a pharmacy where she had to like pull things off of high shelves. And maybe I would, I don't know what.
Yeah. Amanda run her shop.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I would probably be a roofer, I guess. Somebody who had to reach a gutter cleaner or
ceilings
something.
Ceilings were much lower back then.
Yeah.
He also talked about, I wrote down drinking culture. He blamed drinking culture for the eggnog riots. And he also blamed entitled attitudes.
That's one of our keywords, I feel like. Entitlement is sort of an alarmist trigger word, if you will. So I also noted that. And then I also noted that he mentioned no federal holidays, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah,
so
that was very interesting.
We could have put overworking on the board.
Oh, which we kind of discussed when we were, kind of telling in our own way, telling Thayer to give those guys a break. They deserve that eggnog.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Do they deserve that eggnog? This is what we're discussing.
I mean, yes, I think they do deserve the eggnog. But maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I think. OK, so just a reminder to the listeners, we sent the 90 cadets to jail and we slapped Superintendent Sylvanus Thayer. And the Riot Act, I will say, was a close second, but that did not end up being punished.
Right.
Right.
So what do we think? Should we reconsider? I mean, drinking culture, I think, is looking a little bit more suspicious, or it's climbing up the ladder for me.
I mean, I think I always felt like we were a little bit hard on those young boys, drinking hard cider since they were 14 and no federal holidays. They just wanted a party and I'm with them.
Yeah,
I agree. I'm also, I found it interesting his description of Washington as well, his first sort of addressing your question, where he talked about Washington as somebody who was one of those guys at the party who's always saying, okay, let's now toast this, and he like raises his glass and like everyone's like, oh Jesus, dude, like we have to drink a whole nother thing now. And he's like, I feel like I'm really interested in how Washington used his just body mass to run, basically get into a position to run the country, because like when you can outdrink somebody, you have a serious advantage over them in lots of ways. And so if he's the one who's sort of like, he's like, nobody can keep up with me, only because he just happens to be bigger than everyone, and he kind of uses that to his advantage, makes everyone get drunk, and meanwhile he's like running the country the way he wants to. Plus I also thought there was like a correlation between him and, or not a whatever, it was just like he reminded me of Trump a little bit, because he started that business like of
whiskey,
of distilling, that distilling business, and he's capitalizing off of his fame and all that stuff, just like kind of Trump does. And he's like, basically how Trump puts his label on, like he's like Trump water, like buy Trump everything,
like
water. He's well, he does.
I'm
have
not touching Trump water.
No, God, ew.
Do you remember when Trump tried to make water?
No,
it was terrible. It had the bottles were. The bottle was a regular bottle of water, but the like label had Trump's face and it was black and red.
No.
It was like the least appealing water bottle packaging you would ever imagine.
Water that packaging like should be blue. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, or clear.
Or green, Poland Spring.
Ew, no, that makes me think of algae or mold.
I like a little mold in my water.
A little flavor.
You know what you made me realize was that toasting was the drinking game of the 1800s. Or, 18th century. It's like, let's toast to this.
I think that's true. And it was sort of like a skill that you had to have, I think, to be a fun dinner guest, was to be able to deliver a good toast.
Yeah. So the more you guys are, I feel like you guys are convincing me that I think the drinking culture had something to do with this riot, because it wasn't, the changes that Thayer was trying to implement, it might have been too extreme too quickly. You can't just change the culture of an institution and, when it's so different. I think what we're forgetting is how different it was from the outside world, right? What's going on around them.
What are you talking about? Oh, West Point. Yeah,
West Point.
The
difference between what was happening inside West Point versus the second you stepped out and you went to one of those taverns and like literally everyone back home and in your family. It's a massive difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. These are the traditions. And we know how people get when you try to take away their traditions. They freak mm-hmm. out. So I don't know. I guess we could send 19th century drinking culture to jail and maybe just release the cadets just in time for Christmas.
They're going to be so happy.
But like, seriously, you know what I think? If this had been like, okay, this is the battle of our lives. This is the night before the battle of our lives. And it's the most important battle. You know, we're fighting for freedom or whatever. And then they got drunk. I'd be like, come on, guys. Like, what are you doing? But it's Christmas. Yeah. They got drunk on Christmas.
Right.
Big whoop.
Big stinking whoop.
They shouldn't have taken out their bayonets. Lesson learned.
Though, you know what? They've been in the drunk tank and now they've sobered up and I think it's time to let them out.
Okay. Okay. I'm calling it. You're right. The cadets, you've been formally released. Please join your families for Christmas. And drinking culture in the 1800s. You're going to the alarmist jail.
Nice.
And Thayer, you know, keep that little cheek available because we might slap you again, you know?
Ooh,
we
a might double slap.
Just for fun. Maybe after we've had a few glasses of Washington's Nog.
Does the big slap mean that after they get the big slap, they could potentially get the big slap any day in perpetuity if we ever run into these people? Is that what you're implying there by saying that Thayer could get another slap?
I think one slap, look, it's not enough.
Additional slaps. The big slap means you could get slapped again.
Yeah, well, there's an echo. I put an echo on that slap, so that echo keeps on echoing.
So, Amanda, do we have any business affairs that we need to tie up?
I mean, honestly, just enjoy your holiday. And we announced it on last week's episode, but we have merch. It might be a little late for a holiday gift, but I don't know. Maybe you could expedite the shipping or something. But that's go to erios.net/shop. And all of our alarmist merch is there. It helps support the show and you get a fun little gift for yourself. And it's also linked in our show notes. And then also we would like to ask you as our holiday present if you would rate and review the podcast, because we read every single one of those. It helps people discover the show. It helps us climb up those ladders and charts and algorithms, and it's really all we want from you guys. So
it's all we want for Christmas.
So rate and review and spread the good word about the Alarmist.
Yeah. And sing about it in a holiday tune. That's
oh yes, go caroling door to door in your neighborhood wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for listening to our show, and we wish everyone a happy holiday. And of course, tune in next week. We will be discussing who's to blame for Jurassic Park.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.